Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Welcome to The Creative Spark. Today's guest, John McCarney, is a graduate of the Writers Guild Foundation Veterans Writing Project, is an award-winning screenwriter and community builder who grew up in Hollywood in the 1960s. Three of his screenplays have placed in the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science Nickel Fellowship in the last 5 years, two of them semifinalists. He's had multiple screenplays finished in the Austin Film Festival screenwriting contest, along with many other wins. He's an American Cuban, having been embraced by a Cuban family who took him in during his teen years. He is also a certified bilingual and volunteers as an ESL teacher, helping new immigrants learn English. Welcome, John.
Hey, Brian. Thank you very much for having me here.
It's my pleasure. Gosh, we have a lot to talk about. For starters, tell me about the Cuban family that took you in when you were younger and maybe how that influenced you and your work going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I grew up in Hollywood in the 1960s. I went to a new school in fourth grade, and there was a new immigrant there from Cuba, Angel, and we didn't know anybody, so we just started hanging out. And he didn't speak any English, but he always had a big bag of food at lunch, and my house was very food I probably shouldn't say deprived, but it's very difficult for food. So long story short, without going into all the sultry details, is I ended up hanging out with him, eventually moving in with him in my teen years. And, you know, that's how, and his grandmother came over. She spoke no English whatsoever. She wanted to speak. So she would meet me every day after school on the porch with books and teach me grammar and history of Cuba. And by the time I graduated high school, I got the award for the most outstanding language student. And it was really because of her, because I was a terrible student, but I could speak Spanish really well.
Wow. So. Wow. Yeah, now, so how, I mean, how did that, obviously, it colored your view of immigrants and minorities and such? And, you know, how did that open you up possibly wanting to help later on and such and connect.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny, it's kind of like the whole process with that. And you find you kind of don't understand what you're learning as you're learning. And obviously towards immigrants and everything, it opened my eyes up that way. And then as I went in the service later and being in the Philippines and around different cultures and different people in the service, it really opened me up to being, things are a lot different than what I experienced. And it took a whole process. Even when I got out, I ended up, because I could speak Spanish, I got a position within this building department, nuisance abatement team. We go in the inner cities and problem properties, anything from gangs and drugs to cockfighting, all kinds of issues in the inner city, and some white supremacy and separation of stuff later at other places. But it gave me a whole different perspective about looking at cultures and understanding where people are coming from. So it gave me the opportunity to learn about other cultures, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Immersion is the best way to do it, right?
Yep. And you kind of see that we all have very similar things in common. And sometimes the language is a barrier in a culture. But when it gets down to it, we all kind of want to have the same thing, and understanding the language sometimes helps with that.
Yeah. So then you took a short detour and earned a football scholarship to play at the U of O, University of Oregon, but that was short-lived. Tell me a little bit about that and what prompted you to leave.
Yeah, that was, an interesting story how I even got there, because I was a high school dropout hitting the streets of Hollywood, and I ended up going to a Catholic school, getting a scholarship to Oregon. That's a whole other screenplay I could write somewhere. And but I got a scholarship up there. They were a throwing school, as far as anybody knows about football, about passing and running. And I was recruited with my quarterback to go up there. When we got up there, they fired the coaches that we had. And back then, it was not like now where you could go around from program to program. So they wanted to just run and not pass. I got very depressed. I had some other emotional issues at the time, too. So I ended up leaving Oregon, not sure what to do. And I ended up joining the Air Force to become a, I thought I was going to become a combat medic, but I'm trying to parse this down so I don't ramble on too long about these things. But anything more you want to know, let me know.
Well, this was during Vietnam, too.
Right. This was the end of Vietnam. Right as it was, we were working on the peace agreement, and I ended up being trained as a combat medic going to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines. I thought I'd be there on tactical hospitals, that would assist on different missions going out. But I ended up getting put in a newborn nursery taking care of premature babies. So, that was a whole different experience that I didn't want to do it at first. I thought, I don't want to take care of babies. I'm a combat medic.
Wow. So how did that experience, I don't know, affect you going forward, or maybe, some of what you thought you believed about life, and how did it maybe change you?
Exactly. You're hitting right on the thing. When I went there, first off, when you go into service and you're with people from all different cultures from all around the country, you start learning really quick, and everybody's got their defense mechanisms and trying to be tough and everything, including myself. I was quote unquote a football player. But when I went there and I got up in the nursery and I didn't want to do it, I wanted to work on medevacs, and I tried to transfer out and they wouldn't let me do it. And then we had premature babies being born and some being brought in, from different, probably from Vietnam. I don't even remember exactly where they were coming. And I got thrown into help and take care of them, and I became very fascinated with it, and I became extremely good at taking care of the babies. And since it was the end of Nam, and personnel wise we were really limited, they put me on by myself at night, and I would take care of the whole nursery. And I really got into taking care of the premature babies, and they would arrest. Their nervous systems were not developed, and they'd stop breathing, and I'd have to get them to breathe, and tube feedings and
My God.
shots. And it was a whole different experience of something that me as a football tough football player, dealing with the little fragility of life and stuff. So it was really interesting. And then I also they got talked into volunteering for these humanitarian missions on the weekends, or we would go out in the jungle and vaccinate kids and maybe fix some fractured legs and screen people for cleft palates and different all kinds of different things. And I just got to experience whole different cultures, like sitting in a nipa hut after a day of doing that, where they would be feeding us, meals and talking about stuff. It was just a whole different life experience at 20, 21 years old. So.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. I don't know how hardened you were going into that experience, but I mean, it probably softened you quite a bit working with the infants and just being so open to another culture as you were.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you hit it on the head there too, as far as softening, because, at that age, your values that you grow up with, and you're a tough guy and a football player and all this. And this was such a whole different world. And it was an interesting time. The cultural wallpaper in the service, there was a lot of racism, a lot of sexism, and just navigating that and listening to the different sides, and then understanding about, just can't we just all get along, even back then? And but it really changed me. Everything I did there made me really understand things were different. But I think there's a good point in that, is you have to be open to looking at other things too. Because I had buddies that were not. I had a guy that was would not take an order from a woman. He was in medical administration, and he ended up getting discharged because he was just so closed-minded that that's not his role as a male. He should not be taking orders from a woman. So it was a different world, different time.
Yeah. If I may, I heard you talk about in the past having guilt in regard to your service. Would you mind sharing about that and maybe
Yeah.
how it pointed to, ended up a career in writing and such?
Yeah, that's yeah. I try not to be too long on this, but it takes a little bit of a time. But actually, like I was there at the it was the end of Vietnam War. We were the hub operation base for Operation Baby Lift, which was the mixed race kids that were fathered by American soldiers in Vietnam. When Vietnam collapsed, North came down. They were known, which there was actually a Broadway play called Bui Doi, Buidoi, and they are just the lowest thing on earth. And Bui Doi means children of the dust, basically. And because they're not worth even a speck of dust in the Vietnamese culture. So there was this great fear that the North was going to kill all the mixed race kids. So there was an airline owner that actually, the United States government wasn't going to do anything. He ended up doing a rogue flight and taking 58 kids out of Vietnam, got them to the United States, kind of woke up the world, and then President Ford authorized Operation Baby Lift from our base. And it was a crazy time, and they were setting up all the tents to bring all the kids in. Our medevac people were getting ready to go over there. And I just felt isolated because I was so good with the preemies in the nursery. I didn't get to be involved with that. I wasn't involved in setting up the tent city or going on the C-5A airplane that was going to go pick these kids up. And I was mad at the time, but I also felt like I'm just not even part of this. The initial plane that went over there to C-5A actually ended up picking up the kids and crashing on the way back to our base. And 138 people were killed, including 78 kids, 11 Air Force personnel, along with some other volunteers and stuff, two people that were actually from my medevac on my base, along with the ones that were from the Travis Air Force Base. So I felt really kind of guilty that I was out of harm's way when all these people died and everything in this great humanitarian effort. And I kind of just buried it for years. And exactly how it rose up, believe it or not, was. And I don't want to go too long on your time, but to tell the story, I'll cut it short, but I was at a spring training baseball game, and they asked for all the veterans to stand up. This is 45 years later, like in 2018, and I was with people from work, and I wasn't standing up, and somebody knew I was a vet, and they go, "Johnny Mack, why don't you stand up?" And I didn't quite stand up as they were coming down. And one of my other buddies got all mad, like I was being disrespectful to the country. And I go, no, I go, I just don't feel as worthy as people that were vets that went into harm's way and went into battle and did all these things when I was just working in the newborn nursery. And so I kind of broke down. And his wife asked me to, she goes, why don't you write this and get it out? So coming from Hollywood, I figured I'll try to write a screenplay. And I ended up writing a really good screenplay. That's one of the ones that did well in Nichols. And actually, it was a production company trying to get that made into a movie. But I wrote about the whole Operation Baby Lift, the whole operation, and Ed Daly, the airline owner, he was a hard drinking, hard punching, just a belligerent guy that actually made this happen, and this crazy hippie guy that had a Volkswagen van that would go around and get babies in shoebox. And you had all these heroic people. So it didn't really help me with my guilt. And, what really made me do it is I wrote an essay, and the comment, I was at a function at the Ace Theater in downtown LA for Ken Burns's Vietnam. And I was standing in the lobby, and there was a guy there, I think his name was Daniel Hernandez, and he was a decorated hero, Marine hero, a Silver Star. It took him years to get it. But we were just standing out there, and he saw I was an old guy, and he goes, "Hey, were you in Nam?" And I go, "No, I was in Clark during Operation Baby Lift, taking care of preemies and stuff." And he started talking to me about the bit, and then he just stopped and he goes, "You know, it makes me feel good why we were taking life out of this world, that somebody was bringing it in." And that was really the seed that made me think, you know, I haven't really dealt with my guilt yet. So then I wrote an essay called They Also Serve, which another vet, Elvis Lynn Bray, helped me edit and stuff. And it was published by the Americans Veterans Center. And then they called me up. They liked the story. And they said, "We want to have you come back to do an interview to Washington, D.C., for the Library of Congress Veterans Chronicles." And I go, "You guys tell stories of Medal of Honor winners." I go, "Mine's the opposite." And they go, "But yours is the story of the common soldier." And he goes, "It's a really good story. And it's what most soldiers and airmen and people, Navy people, may feel." So I went back there and did that. And then that led to me writing my latest one, When Angels Weep, which they're actually doing a directed table read here in a couple of weeks. So it's a little bit long, but that's the whole
No,
story.
no, no. Thank you. No, that was fascinating. I really appreciate that. Thank you. So I mean, you haven't been writing for that long.
No, you know, that's so the not at all. I'm 73 years old. I think we're talking, what, about 8 years ago? So I was like 65 when I wrote my first thing ever, right? And it was just a cathartic. And you know, I wanted to write a screenplay. And you know, this is where craft and studying and
Formula
classes and things really
yeah
help, because
yeah
I didn't know anything. And I wrote some terrible, terrible stuff. But you know, if you're persistent and you listen, there's so many resources out there. There's so many videos and so many books and stuff. And I just got better and better at it. And like I say, that thing, my very first one, ended up getting in Nichols, and it's won a couple competitions. It's won some pretty good money, which what I do with that money is I set up retreats up in Sedona, and I get like 12 or invite 12 writers or whatever. We have an all-day retreat around the Sedona Film Festival, have lunch, and just, you know, and I like the idea of sharing that if you know, because writers and writers groups will help you get these things to the level they're at anyway. So it's kind of like paying them back too with it. So, but yeah, it's been
That's awesome.
recent that I started writing.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, because screenwriting, I mean, it's not that easy. There's formulas involved, and there's lots of things involved. And so, I mean, you really, really obviously have a knack and skill, but yet also, you picked it up pretty quickly. And that's I'm amazed. I'm very impressed. And you've written five
You know,
screenplays.
I've written, you know, Brian, I've probably written, I was looking at it, I probably have written about 30, and you know, lots of shorts. And I've been rewriting them too. I have five or six core ones that I'm finding as I'm going forward now, is I think everybody's got certain strengths of what they can do write wise or different things. I like, you know, like I'm going to see that movie Hamnet this afternoon. Which is, you know, about William Shakespeare falling in love with a girl or whatever. And I love like Past Lives. I just saw Manchester by the Sea. The, you know, oh, a couple, you know, other ones. I forget. I just went, Train Dreams, another one that just came out now. And I love these, you know, just commentaries on life. And so I'm really focusing on my personal experiences, and more drama type things, you know, where my wife likes the crime dramas and the action movies. I'm the opposite. I love the romantic ones and the dramas and stuff. And you know, and you're saying it's funny that I just started writing recently. Well, you know, writing is I think ruminating and thinking about stuff. So my whole life is my research for the current script. And you know, I kind of throw that into it. So even though I started writing recently, I have such a life experience to bring to that, you know, like that line from, you know, Daniel Hernandez, you know, it makes me feel good somebody's bringing life into this world why we were taking it out. That's in my latest screenplay. And there's a few other ones because, as you learn stuff in life, you can apply it to your writing too. So.
Oh, for sure. And that's kind of I suppose what I base my writing on is just experiences and we're all, like you said earlier, have a lot of shared experiences and same wants and needs and if we can share in our own experiences maybe in a vulnerable way, as you do and as I hope that I do, it gives other people permission and it kind of opens up their hearts.
You're very vulnerable, and like watching your stuff and listening to your stuff, where whatever you're going through that day comes across. And I think that's really good. I think that's what everybody, wants to go ahead. And it's funny because what they say about like with writing with screen, it's like, it's like screenwriting's easy. It's like stuff that you wouldn't tell your closest friend, you decide to put down on paper and share it with the world, right?
He has a different character, even though we know who it is, right?
And but you do, I think, a great job of that, and it's why I, started liking your stuff and everything, because I just think that's so helpful to people, and it's so that vulnerability is what people try to hide, and it's like, no, just show it, and we can all share it, and we can all be better because of it,
Yeah, well, thank you for the kind words and I applaud you as well in doing what you're doing. Yeah. We both share a big love of baseball. And I want you to tell me about your script Shutout and what it's about. And it recently, I think, just got optioned
Yes, it
to be
did.
a
It just
film.
got optioned by Destiny Pictures, and Shutout is the my is the story of my son was a really good baseball player, and I went through a divorce, and he suffered because of it, and it's basically his mental health journey. And I thought about it a couple different ways. I really think it's about a love story of a stepmom and a stepson finding each other in a relationship, and that's kind of what it's really about. It's really about his journey. He was his name is China McCarney. He was drafted a couple times, but he was having such mental issues with the divorce, and his first mom was incarcerated and stuff. So it really was really, really tough on him. And he kind of hid it. I kind of denied it. And it's kind of like of us coming to terms with it. And his stepmom, Barb, they've had the greatest relationship, and they're super close. And she kind of helped them through it. And it was him accepting her. In the end, it really kind of helped him. But he still has issues. He has a foundation, Athletes Against Anxiety and Depression, and he still struggles. And but he wants to tell the story too. And so that's kind of the overview of the thing there. But and Destiny Pictures, I actually developed that in the Writers Guild a foundation, the Veterans Fellowship that I had over the course of a year with professional writers. You come in with a seed of an idea, so there had to be a new idea, which I brought back. And over the course of the year, we get together once a week and go over all the different stuff and get different ideas from them. And so makes me good, happy that I can option and hopefully get it made. Who knows? But yeah, because it actually is a reflection on them helping me too, So,
For
yeah.
sure. So now that it's optioned, I mean, they now are trying to find funding or.
Yeah, they're trying to find people that want to go ahead and do it. So like they took it, I think they took it out to Zero Gravity. And it's it just optioned here within the last month or so. So he's they're putting it together. It's funny because in the course of doing it in the fellowship, it was trying to make the best story as I could. Once De Mark Pistato and Destiny Pictures got a hold of it, there was different things to make it more marketable and different edits and stuff. So we did that, and it's really very budget friendly type thing, location wise. It's a very small town, so you start to learn different things about yes, you have your art, and yes, you have your story that you want to tell. But if you want to get it in the marketplace, if there's compromises you can make on things to help make it more marketable and budget friendly, then there's a much better chance of getting it done. So,
Was that hard for you to let some of that stuff go?
you know what? It really isn't. I have like, it's funny with stories. I have like certain pillars, like with Mark from Destiny. I go, you know, I have different things. Number one, you know, his mom was incarcerated, and it's not a blame thing about her or me or right or wrong. I just wanted to allude to the fact that, you know, maybe she was hurting too, and that's it. So that was a very critical thing for me, and that's one of the few things I'll probably really be adamant about if it does get close to being made, you know. You know, that I wanted to celebrate his love with his stepmom and stuff too. So, you know, there's just that. But other things, it's not that, that's not that hard. My Children of the Dust, the Babylist script, the company that's working with that now, they want to make it more of a political thriller than the kind of love story I have. I had a little bit tougher time with that, but in the end, they're telling that story is about the epic of Operation Babylift and those people. So I don't really have a problem with that either. I think it, you know, what's the message you want to get across in your story? And if that's still coming across, you can't get in the way. The story has to be bigger than your personal desire. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, yeah, I've had a few things altered in the past a little bit, and it's like, oh, but it's just you just got to find that balance. Like, you're right. If the message is still getting across, okay, cool. We're getting some more eyeballs on it, and good, great.
I'm really pretty good at that. It's just the latest one we're doing that, you know, it's really kind of cool because John Lee Hancock is going to direct this live table read in a couple of weeks. And the narrator has already made all these cuts that he wants in the thing. And they present to me like, is he going to be mad? It's like, no, these are good. You know, it doesn't affect the story, the dialogue or whatever. I'm okay unless it's where, you know, I'm sure as time goes by, something will really affect. But
Yeah.
if the core story is there, I'm happy. So,
No, that's awesome. How was the process of selling it and getting it optioned?
you know, that was thing. An interesting story here too is Destiny Pictures. I saw a listing that he had had when he was looking for something, and it was actually an earlier version of When Angels Can Weep. And I sent him, and he goes, no, you know, that's not exactly what I want and stuff. So one quick thing here, real quick, I just noticed my AirPods are at 5%, so I might lose the AirPods, and I might just go to regular things. So sorry about that.
Okay.
But anyway, he just all of a sudden, like almost a year later, he just out of nowhere, he just goes, hey, John, you working on anything like sentimental or anything that, you know, family-wise or something? And then I happened to be just working with Shutout. So I sent that to him, and he really, really liked it. And so we started, you know, working on it some and everything. And he goes, yeah, I want to option it. So then I option it with him. And that's how that went. But it's funny how you don't know what's going to come back. You know, he didn't like what I had before, but all of a sudden he did like my writing. So he came out of nowhere and just said, hey, did you got anything else? So you just don't know
Right.
what you think is a dead end leads to something that isn't, you know?
Absolutely. You just got to keep planting seeds and doing your thing, right?
Yep.
When was the last time you felt stuck on one of your writing projects, and how did you move through
You know, I never, I know it
it?
sounds weird. I don't ever get stuck. I write every day. And
Yeah.
you know, something will go ahead and go and everything. If you're talking about creative flow, I'm a little different with that. If I get to where I need to open up my mind, I go to music. And I like my one go-to song, if I have like, okay, what do I want to write? I'm not sure. It's a not a very well-known song, but it's Bob Dylan's Black Diamond Day. It's a long, crazy song, but it's a very narrative song. And I like to write the way Bob Dylan writes, not that I'm anywhere near him, but just very, almost like Hemingway, where you condense it down to short sentences, not too flowery and stuff. And, I'll go to music to try to get me, if you want to call it stuck. I guess we all get stuck to some degree, but I love the idea of trying to fight through it. I'm going to write every morning, and if so anyway, that's where it is there.
No, thank you. Music's great. For me, I think sometimes I just need movement, get out in nature, and that kind of helps clear me out a little bit, or meditation. But there's so many different, we all have those things that work for us. For our screenwriters that are listening, what advice would you give to a burgeoning screenwriter, someone just starting out?
It's like anything else. It's a craft, and I think wax on, wax off, I think, is a really good way to look at it. Is you just you knew you know with me, my initial thing was just writing. I had no idea what I was going to do. I actually got the Rocky script, and I said 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, they have like 55 scenes. Oh, I just got to write 55 different scenes, And no, I didn't. But I at least got to see what the structure of a screenplay looked like, right? And then I got involved here in Phoenix, the Phoenix Screenwriters Association, and they had classes. And then you look at the different books. You have Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey, Save the Cat, and you get those, and you start to get an idea of how things go. I like to u listen to what do you call it? Film Courage a lot of the videos there. So,
That's amazing. What is something you wish you could tell your 20-year-old self looking back?
I think if I was, because I had a lot of angst at 20. Worrying about what I was going to do. And at 20 years old, I wasn't a football player anymore. And I was just getting, in the service there with the baby lift. And I'm like, what am I doing? I think I would be more curious about what choice I made and where I'm going, and just embrace the choice I made. I think for the longest time, I think, oh God, I'm going in the wrong direction. I was a football player my whole life. I had no clue of the different things I was going to do, but and I thought I was such a failure at 20 because I wasn't going to pursue football. But I think I would embrace the curiosity. I think that's what I would tell myself, is embrace it, because I'm looking now. I am so happy in life for the experiences, and you don't think they're the right experiences at the time. But that is life. That's what makes us who we are. And I'm pretty happy of who I've become as a human being. And, my whole philosophy in life is, I think we're here to take the human spirit from one generation to the next. And I think my life experience has helped me to get to this point where I can help not only do that for me, but help other people around me, just as you do, Brian. I can see it in everything you do. You do that same thing. So.
Thank you. Well, I love that, the human spirit, passing it on from one generation to another. That's I've never heard it before like that. And yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, well, and it's funny that actually hit me. It's funny how you're getting me to think about different things. So I'm going back
My
30 years now.
job.
Barb, my wife, and we were together, and we were just gotten married, and I had my kids, and we went to a furniture store, and I'm not into art. I saw a painting of Vincent van Gogh, and it was We Feel with Crows. I actually have a copy of it here in the house now. Not an original, just a copy. And it just really, really moved me, and I'd never been moved. And I just remember looking at his art and seeing that those brush strokes, and I go, God, it's almost like he was so tortured that his brush strokes, as he was trying to to claw through the canvas to get to the other side, to move on to the other side. And I actually pulled the car over and I weeped a little bit. I'm an emotional type guy. And it really hit me. That's where that thing hit me. It's like, and I told my wife, I go, you know, I figured this out, that why we're here. We're here to try to go beyond, to take it to a different level, someplace we don't know. And then it just really crystallized into that, taking the human spirit from one generation to the next. Because really, I really think that that's what it's about. No matter what you believe in religion or what you're doing in life, you know, that if you're doing that to some degree, that is to have lived. It's like the meaning of success, right? With, you know, on a Walden's Pond, you know, it's like, you know, Emerson, it's like to make it just a little bit better for a child or plant a flower, that is what success is. So anyway, there's, I'm gonna get off my pedestal right there.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. We're starting to wind down. I have another question for you. Does low self-esteem ever affect your creativity? Because I know that I've talked to many people and it does. And I'm just wondering, how that resonates with you.
Well, I, you know, I think, I think, and that's a good point too, because, you know, writing, and I think probably any art in general, is rejection, you know, and it, I mean, it's totally, and you know, you'll get stuff where you write something, I'll get something or win a contest, you put it in another competition, and it won't even be selected, right? So it's subjective too, but I think that the biggest thing as an artist for me that I've kind of embraced, and I'm older and I'm not having to make money with this every day, but it's just creating the art, creating the words. It's, you know, I really, you know, it's kind of corny to say, you know, you write for yourself, but I think your best stuff is when you're really writing for yourself and then other people can enjoy it. I love writing something that I think is really good for me, and then you take it to a writer's group, and they have different perspectives of life, right? They're all kinds of different things. They grew up in good in households that were real loving, or this or that, and they'll give you a different perspective, and then you can include that and change it a little bit to kind of make it. But I think you can't worry about the rejection, and that's just the low self-esteem. It's like, what is this? This is a piece of crap. I, you know, growing up in Hollywood, the thing I'm writing right now is called Americano. Growing up with the Cubans and being on the streets of Hollywood and getting a scholarship, I got a really good idea for that. And I wrote the first 30 pages of that. And I looked at it and I go, no, this ain't working. This is crap. And so I've discarded that. But I'm coming back to it. It's just part of the process that rejection or feeling like you're not doing anything good is really the first step of doing something really good. You know, I think you just,
We got to start somewhere.
you got to start somewhere. And, you know, it's like hitting notes on a piano with a thing. It's like ding, ding, ding. Ooh, that doesn't sound right. And then you hit the right ones. It's about playing about it. But I really think that as an artist, that's probably the hardest thing is don't be hard on yourself. Like you look at something, and even if somebody else thinks it's great, you think, oh, this is crap. But, you know, it's just part of the process. I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for saying that. I know before we go, I want you to briefly talk about your son's mental health foundation.
Yeah, it's Athletes Against Anxiety and Depression Foundation. And what happened with him is the reason that how he started it. Is I when he's having the issues, I always had, you know, different psychologists and different people see me, wouldn't see him. And he had a super bad panic attack. He was at the Habit and he had ordered food to go and he could not even go in to pick up the food because of the panic attack. And so he called me and he goes, Pops, he goes, he told me what happened. He goes, I go, well, you know, you got the one. I already had it set up. He went like 2 days later to see the psychologist. And it just opened up his mind that he wasn't alone, he could get help and everything. And he's still battling with it, but he thought, you know what? There's so many other people that are like me. So he started raising money. He had a couple of baseball players, pool players, donate some money. And his big thing was getting free therapy for people. You get up to 2 months of free therapy. He works with BetterHelp. And, you know, you go, now the thing is, he was winding it down because it's a reminder about his mental health issues. But once I started, doing shutout, and he went to the table read on it, and he goes, "I got to keep this thing going." So he still has the foundation. They don't have as much funds right now for free therapy, but there's also telling his story. He's there for people to contact him, to help get resources and everything. And he still can help you some, just not as much as he was before. But hopefully that changes. If I make any money off of this screenplay, it's all going to go towards his foundation so people can get, free therapy. But it's the name of the organization is Athletes Against Anxiety and Depression Foundation.org. So it's AAADF.org. And you can kind of see his story, and you can tell your story. You get to write in, or if you got questions for him, and he can still refer you to different, there's still some, places you can get free therapy from and different resources too. He just had a really good thing. It's just, I know it's winding down funds-wise right now, but hopefully we can wind it back up too.
Oh, that's amazing. And that's thank you for thank him for doing that. And thank you for helping out. And
Yeah.
I will have all of your links in the show notes. So if anybody
Okay.
wants to, check out
Cool.
what you're doing and that foundation, they can do that. And I just really appreciate you joining me today, John. That was really an interesting chat, and you're doing a lot of interesting stuff and making a mark in a positive way in the world.
So are you, Brian. I mean, that's the thing that's really good about it. I just think that, let's kind of just accentuate the positive, forget the negative. There's no song that way or something, right?
Yes, exactly.
But let's just go that because I mean that negative vibe that's out there. I mean, we're all different. We all have different perspectives on stuff. But in the middle, the good people of us, so it's all on both sides. We want the best for everybody. So let's try to focus on that. So.
I agree. Well, thank you, my friend, and best of luck to all your screenplays, and may they be seen and make a difference in people's lives.
Thank you. And thanks for everything you do too, Brian. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson and all that is going on in his Creative Spark world, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.